And finally, I would like to introduce tonight's speaker, Arturo.
Thanks. My name is Arturo, and I am an alcoholic. I hope my voice cooperates tonight. I am an alcoholic. I have taken three areas for this presentation, which is only done for myself. I never done this before, not being a speaker, because I talk a lot. I used to talk for a living. But to go introspective into Arturo's mind and to see how it comes out by nine. How's that? You can help me. That you can see where the disease really is, okay? So the first part is where I come from. Then what happened, what it was like, what I miss with a sponsor who was Dick Hoag, who knew Bill W. in New York and got me to sobriety, and what I did with sobriety. And for 17 years, you gotta remember, I got sober January 28th of 1990. And I was dry drunk for 21 years. So this is a share about dry drunkenness and the word humility, humility. So let's see how it goes, okay? I don't know how many of you might be dry drunk tonight, but you know when we pray? We pray for the alcoholic who still suffers. Most of those we pray for are sober. Did you know that? Okay. So, I was born in Mexico City to a Spanish father from Spain and a Mexican mother. He was a qualified sociopath. Truly, clinically proven, a psychopath. He left us when I was five, and my brother was two. My mother was 16 when she had me and drank herself to death by being run over by an 18-wheeler in San Francisco. My brother made it through 40. And he committed suicide. So I was the only thing left. By the time I was 14, I was in South San Francisco as an immigrant. I didn't speak English, but I came out to be a second valedictorian out of San Francisco High School. I don't know how I did that. I could chase and disguise myself with pride to cover shame. When I lost my mother in the accident, I learned to survive by staying strong, by appearing composed, and later by chasing success. Success. I really believe that I could think or work my way through anything. Think my way through anything. I never thought about humbling myself. I just thought about achieving. So I was an electrical engineer from UCLA with honors. I started using and drinking, moved through Pepperdine with a master's in business, and ended up in Stanford in advanced negotiations. And that got me to Sausalito, surrounded by eight doctors, bleeding from every goddamn hole in my body, with a near-death experience. So it ain't education. And I truly was proven to be clinically dead for about 3 hours. A lot of you guys that I love, you may not know that about me. But my bottom, the next one, if it ever happens, is dead. My bottom was complete. So that's kind of a fun way to start. So you get it. I was successful on the outside, but empty on the inside, right? A lot of people share about that. But they bullshit you through it. They intellectualize when they share. Larry and I are wearing a suit for whatever reason. We do it out of respect for everybody, I think. But I don't want to put words into Larry. There was no way that I could have come from San Francisco and stay sober. But on January 28th of 1990, I began to take the program of AA like I took my business to success, to achievement. That's how I screwed it up. My attitude was succeed in AA, succeed in the 12 steps, be the executive vice president of AA by the first year. My sponsor told me that I should not date or see anybody for the first year, but my business was thriving and I needed an exotic looking figure to run my business on the social side. So at the end of the first year, I got married. And as an overachiever, I knew I wanted to get divorced 2 weeks after I got married. But I lasted 21 years and had 3 children. Any takers? Remember, I use words to persuade. You know, I never use words to heal. So I persuaded sponsees, people in the program, to know that I was pretty cool. You know, I ran one day into the triangle: honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And I realized that a lot of people mentioned that the basis of this program, the entire thing, was humility. And humility to achieve what? Humility to achieve what? A religious experience? A godlike experience? A spiritual experience? What the hell did I need to achieve in AA? Because I was looking for achievement, right? So if I don't have a goal, I'm very frustrated. So when I began my career as a dry drunk, you know, I found the 3 impossibles. Some of you may want to take notes. You know what the 3 impossibles are? Number 1. Seeking total approval from others. Number 2, trying to be perfect. Trying to be perfect. And number 3, believing that I could control people and outcomes. I prove that that is unattainable. I tried that thousands of times because I wanted everything to be perfect in my sobriety. None of them filled the quiet space that only with grace can be filled. You know, in AA, I had to learn humility. But let's see what I miss on the readings. Second part of this presentation. How much rank, status do I need to gain the acceptance, happiness, and satisfaction to allow myself to be enough and to stay in the present? How much? How much is enough? It wasn't education. It wasn't the 6,500 square foot house on the water. It wasn't the three kids. They drove me crazy. It wasn't the 200,000 miles a year that I was flying. And where was AA? I respect South Bay Pioneers so much. I heard about this from Ergo Mayors in the 90s, from John, who I love and is dear to me, and many of you who are dear to me. But what did I miss in AA? I mean, goddamn Stanford didn't help me get the steps. I intellectualize the steps. So let me go at 8:25 with you over what the hell I might have missed in AA with all that intellect, you know? I had made enough for 5 or 10 lifetimes. And I was a miserable son of a bitch. And the program wasn't helping me. I got divorced in AA. So, you know, there is a quote, a really interesting quote that came to me. And I'm not a very religious person, but, you know, in the practice of, and I want to read it very, very close to you. It talks about Matthew saying, of what good is it to gain the world if you lose your soul? You know, Jewish, Christian, Catholic, Jehovah's Witness, same message. So there had to be something in AA that I missed, and let me go through it real quick. Remember this guy, Dick Hogue? I did the third step, the fourth step, the fifth step, the sixth and the seventh, according to the big book, in my mind. How it works, I probably read it thousands of times like you have. But the implicit word is humility. It talks about surrender of pride and self-will. It says in the big book that recovery begins only when ego loosens. Chapter 6, Into Action, pages 72 to 88. I missed that one for 21 years. Real humility arrives when we act honestly before another human being. That's step 7. I didn't do that. The 7th step prayer embodies humility as surrender. Didn't do that. True humility manifests as service, not self-display. Service, that's where it comes from. That's what we need to give it away. That's what we need to help others, to contribute. You can't keep it. No, it's because something happens when you give it back. And that's the most spiritual connection that you'll ever be able to experience in your lifetime, I believe. But I never felt it. One, I was codependent, and the other one, I felt nothing. humility in the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. Please don't question me on this, because I counted them for this presentation or sharing. Humility appears on the 12 and 12 and the big book 60 times. Not six, not seven, 60 times. And humility is the fertile ground to reach God. God. For those of you that don't want to hear the word God, you might as well leave. That's what I missed. At the center of every bullshit thought and intellectualizing that I have done, the 12 steps are about action. Acting, faking it until I made it, was not going to be my answer, but it became my answer after the 21 years. I had to stop thinking because it was going to kill me. I was more miserable with 21 years in AA than I was before I got to be bleeding in San Francisco. Can you believe that? I never became suicidal, but I was so miserable, so done with, that I didn't realize I didn't even love myself. So after those 60 times, I'll read you some incredible readings that I missed. Real humility arises from complete self-honesty. Real humility is recognizing imperfection itself. Acknowledging we can't achieve perfection on our own ever. Humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. The attainment of greater humility is the foundation principle of each of the 12 steps of AA. Let me go back to that one and flash on it. It says that the entire 12 steps, each one was created and written for humility. For reaching humility. It's a preamble to reaching God, spirituality, or your ability to deal with this disease. Faith without works is dead. Faith without works is dead. So, humility is spiritual strength, not weakness. I didn't get that one. Humility to me in business? No way. Humility to me before Sponsee, I had to know more shit than he did. I had to look cool with my sponsor. I had to have the right answers. I ended up with 5 attorneys on each side of the divorce court. And I still had all the answers, which cost me a fortune. Had I stayed quiet, but my sponsor told me to be quiet. But I had a better answer. You know, when I did 6th and 7th step, you know what I did? Because if you read it in the big book, the 6th and 7th step are like 2 lines. Dick Hogue told me the reason why Bill W. wrote the 12 and 12 is because he made a mistake in the big book by doing such a short version of the 6th and 7th. That's why the 6 and 7 are so complete in the 12 and 12. It says, by the way, they're really important. As a matter of fact, for Bill W., it was the most important steps of all the steps, because those defects of character, like alcohol, are not removed because you intellectualize, you think, you acknowledge, you realize, you become aware of. No, it's so you can put them before God to remove them, because we don't have the strength to ever lose our defects of character. For Arturo Alemany, my defects of character will live with me to the day I die. And it's just a matter of exercising. It's like going to the goddamn gym every day. John B. passed away. And I didn't like him too much, because he was so serious about saying, Arturo, every morning I wake up with untreated alcoholism. So do I with my defects of character. It's action. I can't think about fighting my defects of character. I can only pray for the strength and the attitude to be able to think enough of my higher power with faith to remove them for me for the day. And sometimes it's by 12 noon. You know, it's like the mental masturbation of the non-alcoholic beer. It's an attitude. If I don't put my defects of character before God, who the hell do I put them to? My sponsor? My employees? My kids? To whom? I need the strength to remain 24 hours sober. And this is where a lot of people find some opposition to what I'm about to say. Mm-hmm. I stopped being dry drunk the day that I realized that the message was for me, that pages 86, 87, and 88 are daily readings. My goddamn ego said, read them whenever you can. But if you read 86, 87, and 88, it will save me a half an hour. It puts you in a position that John B. was talking about. You start with a fighting chance not to be a goddamn alcoholic. Because you are an alcoholic to the day you die. Because you think. As Descartes, the philosopher, I think, therefore I am. Arturo Alemany, as an alcoholic, says, I think, therefore I am screwed. That's not nice. Let's go back to what else. This, you know, this idea of 86, 87, and 88, for those of you that are volunteers in the kitchen, cleaning tables, making coffee, obviously, humility comes from action. But the greatest action is to set your mind every morning to deal with the dragon. And to be humble enough to know that your day will not be as connected if you don't bring God to the center of your life. Call it your higher power, a doorknob, whatever the hell you want to call it. Faith without works is dead. But if I take myself through all, what I learned through 6 and 7 was that I really didn't love myself. What happens? Because I didn't love myself, I dated some of the most toxic people in the world. After the 5 attorneys. After I swore I would never be married again. Because nobody could give me and make me as happy as I wanted to be. No one could make me happy. So I was going to stay by myself, have a really cool life, go to the world, forget about the kids, do whatever, let them do whatever they want. But you know what? No one was going to make me happy because I didn't want to be in a relationship because I needed somebody to make me happy. When I work through the 6 and 7 with my sponsor, and I went through the 5th step again and got to the 4th column, I realized that it was all about me. So if it was all about me, this program could help me enough to be able to have an inventory with the guy in the mirror. You know who the guy in the mirror is, right? When you wake up in the morning and you look like you look, if you're there to look, that person is the one you need to please, satisfy, and be okay with. No one else. No one else. And that inventory with the mirror, for me, put me in a place where after many years of looking at the mirror, I became aware of one thing. Character counts. John, character counts. You know, 3 schools later, a lot of success, the ability to be independent for the rest of my life, none of that was as beautiful as the day that I had a final goal, to have a character as a human being that I would be proud of to the day I die, and to make little contributions every day to make it a better and a better relationship with myself. When I sat through that goal, things got better for the first time in my life. I was working with the McAllister Institute. I was of service. I was listening to people instead of talking all the time. And one day, the miracle happened. I healed enough to find a normie. Someone that I respect, love, adore, and find such a gift, because I don't need her to make me happy. She has her own life. She walks her own path, and I'm parallel with her. But I promised to myself that I would give her the best ride of her life and contribute to her only when she asks for, and as we respect each other. And that woman is sitting here, God bless. That's a different way to relate to human beings, especially someone that you're gonna live to the day you die. But that's all on the 4th column of the 5th step. And that's the mirror, and character counts. Please remember that. If you don't remember anything about Arturo, character, it's a great goal. Better than the degrees in engineering, business, and whatever. I wish somebody had told me at 15, Arturo, your future self is talking to you. Work on your character and everything else will be taken care of. How you act, how you speak. Are you kind? Are you generous? Do you get out of your comfort zone for other people? Are you willing to listen? Humility is the foundation of all the 12 steps to reach God, as you want to call it. Now, why is it so hard for intellectually brilliant people like alcoholics to deal with spirituality and the word God, if the program is about developing the humility to be fertile enough not to be so controversial and object so much to the word God or Spirit? Why does it have to be tangible, logical, rational? Why? Because we're alcoholic. We want the proof in the pudding. Something you don't see, is you're going to give yourself to it? Even though you're away from the substance and the alcohol, and your ass is somewhat safe? You build enough, what? Ego. Your ego continues to do push-ups on you every day. Every time you think, your ego is doing push-ups. I got it. So let me basically share with you something that is really interesting. I am not a psychologist. I am not a therapist. I only study advanced psychology for negotiations and business. And we play some tricks when millions of dollars are in the table. We manipulate people. So let me tell you a few of those manipulations. Number one, if in the negotiation you see somebody being really calm and collected, and as a matter of fact, and your bullshit's not working, you begin to move their ego. Most men are infantile. And most women have all the answers. So bear with me for a second. In The Power of Now, Edgar Atoll talks about staying in the present. We only have 24 hours. That's the beauty of our program, 24 hours. We only need to stay sober tonight, today. Tomorrow, we don't know. But when you stay in the present, also your ego stays in the present. And something funny begins to happen. Most alcoholics, when they experience the present, they get bored. They confuse boredom with peace of mind. When nothing is happening, we don't feel comfortable. Most people don't feel comfortable when they are at peace, because they confuse that with boredom. So your ego is doing the push-ups of taking you to the past. Say, hey, Arturo, I know you're happy here. I know you have a beautiful family. I know you have everything you'll ever need. You have great friends. But remember 1997? Remember what you screwed up in 2008? That was really bad, wasn't it? Yeah, I wish I'd done this and that and that. Totally useless, right? But your ego says, think about that. I'm doing my seven-step prayer, so I understand you, but let's go back to the present. So the ego says, okay, cool. Let's go back to the present. So he sits there like a 12-year-old and says, hey, why don't we go to the future? With all the tariffs, you're going to be screwed up. The world's going to end next week. Oh, you bought a Bitcoin? You're screwed. Remember Christmas? You have no money. Remember that backyard? There's a gopher back there. Why is ego doing that? Because when it goes to the future, it has a validation with you. But if you keep it in the present, it has no job other than drive your ass to and from work and to meetings to keep you safe. That's its job. Nothing else. It's a servant to keep you safe. When the tiger comes after your ass, in the old days, you jump on the tree because your ego takes you to the tree. That's it. But if it begins to take over your brain, it becomes a goddamn ruler. And it takes over your life. But when you keep it in the present, you have a fighting chance, and the ego will sit there and think that it doesn't have a job. And you know what happens psychologically? It thinks that it's dying. And the ego will never allow you to kill it. So imagine the fight we have as alcoholics, keeping that son of a bitch within the 24 hours, not ahead of us, not behind us. That's why we don't take it sometimes very seriously. At least I don't. And what I'm saying to you today, tomorrow when I visit with my grandkids, I might be in the future. I might need to call my sponsor. Because I'm also vulnerable. I need help. I can never think alone. 99% of all the people that I have worked with, 3 suicides, many relapses, they all started with one thing, isolation. Why is isolation so dangerous? Because in isolation, you're not thinking about God. You're just mentally masturbating with your ego. And because you cannot make the effort to go talk to someone and ask for help, your ego's got you where it wants. The more you think, the deeper the hole. And that's why they say a sponsor is the guy that will jump in the hole with you to let you know you're in a hole. That's the way it works. And a sponsor should never tell you what to do because you're only an alcoholic and your sponsee would eventually is the undisciplined part of the millions of alcoholics that pick up the big book and it says 86, 87, and 88 were written for people that are undisciplined. We are not disciplined. We don't follow orders or take orders. So sponsors can only share their experience, strength, and hope. When my ass was falling like yours, this is what I did. You do whatever the hell you want. But I see a lot of sponsors going, oh, you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to do that. Let me give you a recommendation about an accountant, an attorney, whatever. That's bullshit. I can only tell you what I did and how I got out of trouble. Maybe how I stopped bleeding in San Francisco. And maybe what happened to me after my ass was on the ground after my divorce. Many times people ask me about their divorce. And you say, this too shall pass, and they want to hit you in the face. But that's your only obligation as a sponsor. Anyway, I hope I'm not boring you, but there is a connection with humility. And there's only one purpose for humility. And that's, you know, you notice most of my stuff was on ChatGPT, but this wasn't. So I'm going to get close to the last 10 minutes, Larry. Humility is not something we master. It's something we practice. That was the first part of the idea. Matthew 8:36 said, for what shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Tonight, I stand before you as a man who has gained and lost many things. But through humility, I have learned how to keep my soul intact. It's not the size of your success that defines you, but the depth of your surrender. I'm going to repeat that. It is not the size of your success that defines you, but the depth of your surrender. That's why Bill W. was depressed. That's why he needed help. And he asked for help. And he taught us how to ask for help and to remain strong through weakness. That was the greatest strength that he ever demonstrated to all of us, asking for help when he needed it, like we all will eventually need help. We're not going to ever be completely perfect and completely healed. I don't believe that. At least that's my theory. So the ultimate idea that I want to share with you came from, by the way, I am qualified to know enough about philosophy to have been an outstanding scholar in my school of five philosophers. That means that I outdid all my other Jewish and German friends in philosophy and debate. So I could debate you in any bar over any philosopher or any idea you may have. You know, as a matter of fact, when I was using, I used to go to the bathroom, and when I would go back to the table, I didn't remember what the hell the conversation was all about. So I would ask someone next to me and says, what were we talking about? He says, well, we're talking about abortion. Was I pro or against? And I would just pick it up from there. So for those of you that maybe are newcomers, feel free to know that you're just like me today. We just had today. If you're thinking, get some help. It says, this is something that came from Spinoza, 1657, 17th century. To realize in some degree that you are an individualization of God could not possibly make you egotistic or vain. On the contrary, it would give you your true humility and at the same time, true self-confidence, and indeed is the only pathway to overcoming fear. That's the word that motivates all human beings. There are 67 displays psychologically of fear in people. By the way, that's why you have a job. Fear of not eating. The fear of dying. The fear of going on vacation. The fear of your flight being canceled tomorrow. It's a lot of fears, and we act because of fear. But some people are hitting their wives. Some people are screaming at the top of their lung after the meeting. Some people are sponsors and sponsees, and they go out of the rooms of AA. And instead of acting like they act with us alcoholics to their children and to their wives, they act like assholes. And then they come back for the 7 o'clock meeting. And then they're okay again for an hour. So the only way to approach God is by watching the way your steps are every day. I learned in the last 5 minutes that if I wanted to be respected, I had to do deemable things to be respected. If I wanted to earn respect, I had to do respectful things. Help others, get out of your comfort zone, don't scream at your kids, shut up, allow people to talk. But most importantly, whatever you do between right and wrong, I don't think right and wrong should not exist, because otherwise you wouldn't know the difference. But I do know when I'm acting right. And I do know when 24 hours have happened, and I feel very proud of my actions, not my thinking. So watch your feet, not your thinking. Please watch your feet and your actions and your mouth and the way you treat others. Because if you want to measure your sobriety, just look around you, at home, at work, everywhere. How do people feel about you and around you is the measure of your sobriety. That's the end chapter of this communication. It's not that sophisticated. It doesn't take a lot of rationalization. It doesn't take psychology. Just watch how people feel around you and how you treat all the beings around you. A lot of my sponsees decide to cheat, steal, do whatever they want to do sober. That's their job. But at the end of the day, remember the mirror. And also remember that when you look at the mirror, you'll be seen an extension of God. We're godlike. We're creators. It's funny how humans can create anything that they make up their mind to do. So why are we creators? Why do we think that we're going to live forever? Why do we have such a problem with dying? It's because we're godlike. I believe we're all extensions of a higher power. And the more that we can act on it, our lives will be godlike. But when you see people working, Boys to Men, McAllister, Gene McAllister being sold, everybody that is acting in the favor of working with others and helping other people, they're displaying something that all religions talk about. Every religion talks about the same thing. The lowest common denominator is love. And I'll end with this. Love is not something the Beatles wrote about. Love is the only energy that overcomes fear. Unconditional love is the most spiritual feeling that you'll ever experience. And when you're facing a young kid becoming a man, that's God in you, through you, and for you. And the more you do it, the stronger you get. And the sobriety is not about not drinking or using. It's about finding God. Love you guys.
I would like to thank Arturo for speaking this evening, and please come back and visit us soon. I'd also like to thank the residents of the House and the Women's Auxiliary for a fantastic dinner. Thank you. And we will now close the meeting in the usual manner with the prayer of the speaker's choice.